This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with East Baton Rouge Parish District Attorney Hiller Moore. Much to talk about, including the year in crime. Baton Rouge still has a high crime rate comparatively, but based on years past, it was a huge improvement, particularly in the number of murders in the city this year to this point. We'll talk about what happened to prompt the change for the better with Hiller Moore, and also what's going on with Brave and many other activities that his office is involved with as we move ahead to 2014. How will crime be in this community in the year to come? Hiller Moore with us when we return after this timeout for the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. J.C. Kane is producing. Your numbers are 297-5633, 877-217-5757 outside the Baton Rouge calling area. And online, you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Hiller Moore is our guest, the East Baton Rouge Parish District Attorney, elected in 2008, going away. And he will be running for re-election in 2014. And so far, I don't know of anybody who's stepping up to run against him, but there quite likely will be some opponents. There usually are. But this year, in particular, has been a good year for law enforcement. Based on years past, Baton Rouge made some big strides in a positive way, including a 28% decrease thus far for 2013 in the murder rate. Hiller Moore, why is it more than a quarter down this year as opposed to last?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons why. And hopefully my answer doesn't sound political in the sense that, law enforcement has taken some credit. But it seems that the things that we've done different this year compared to others and beginning September last year is the Brave initiative, the gun violence and the group violence reduction strategy that we've employed. That's taken a lot of effort, by the Baton Rouge Police Department, the Sheriff's Office, these men and ladies jumping out of their cars all throughout the night, doing very proactive work, a lot of social media work, a lot of research at LSU, major trials, many more jury trials this year for us. Some that were risky for us that we took chances on and tried. And so everybody really working together with a focused effort compared to just a general globalized effort, I think that's really made the difference. And not only in this calendar year, January to the end of December, but if you go back further to September of last year when we started, I think that you're looking at a reduction of 40 people that have not been killed that, otherwise as the trend was, would have been killed. And I think when you look at that, you also have to think of not only the people that are not dead, but the families and the tax issues and the business-wise money that it helps. But 40 and more other individuals are not in jail for the rest of their life. So you may be saving 80 people. It's a good thing. Really proud of the effort that we've done with this and just in the community itself. Mm-hmm. We can't do this without the community. Now, to me, that really is the difference. I think I would probably rely on some criminologist or someone else that's situated in a different position than me to give you that definitive answer. That's what I see.
Can it be sustained?
Absolutely. that's going to be our challenge. So our challenge was this year just to have some reduction. We wanted maybe five bodies less than the year before, start off with a modest change. And right now we're probably at around 19 or so. And so we're proud of where we are. But sustaining that now is going to be tough to have a further reduction next year. And the funding source is always an issue. Right now we have grant money. We were mm-hmm. very successful through the research component at LSU. Dr. Cecile Guin, that we've now received up to $4.5 million for 3 years. We've already gone through one. So if we don't have that money, we don't really get the research part that we critically need. So sustaining this is going to be difficult.
297-5633 if you'd like to talk with Hiller Moore, joining us live in studio 2 days after Christmas. I presume it was a good holiday for you and your
absolutely.
Family.
Absolutely.
Very good. And it's always good to celebrate good news.
Yep.
And this year the news is much better than it has been. And the technology is such that in this community when a gunshot is fired in Baton Rouge. You know about it almost instantaneously.
Absolutely. We have shot spotters around the city, in the parish. So more in the high crime rate areas than other places, but they try to put them all around the city as much as they can in the parish. And when a shot is fired, that goes off, and the dispatchers hear it instantly. It's recorded. It'll tell you the direction of the shot. It'll tell you the caliber of the shot. It'll give you a GPS mapping of where the shot came from. And most of the time, these are actual shots that are being fired. Now, we've had cars run over garbage cans and have made similar sounds, and you know, it doesn't give you a caliber when they go out there. It's a garbage can. However, they're really accurate, and police are able to get to that scene very quickly. If you recall, Chief Jeff LaDuff, his brother-in-law was killed, and yes, that case went out as the shots fired from the shot spotter, and the police were there instantaneously and found people going away from the scene. Without that technology at that point, I don't know if we would have been successful in that case. So it's very good. But the good news from the shot spotters and for Baton Rouge that goes along with the crime reduction is my understanding is that we're looking at a 50% reduction in shots fired in Baton Rouge. And that's a number that's fairly accurate because of the shot spotter information. And so the less amount of shots that are fired, that means the less amount of people hopefully being shot, hurt, and killed.
You are able to quantify that 50% shots fired down, which probably explains why the murder rate is 27-28% down.
Yeah.
Because most of the people who are killed in this community are usually killed with guns.
Yes.
They?
And, you know, this year we've had some that have not been killed with guns. And further with the murder rate, so another interesting thing, because we follow these.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about crime and crime stats, you know, I'm not sure how accurate a lot of the stats are always burglary versus a theft and things like that. But murder, you really can't hide with the body that's on the ground. And looking at this year's numbers, and we're at 64, I believe, or 65 compared to 83, I think, last year. Three of these murders this year are considered murder-suicide. Husband, wife, dad, daughter. And so those three murders are considered against us in a murder count. That's hard for us to stop. Also, we've had this year, unfortunately, five or so infants from 6 weeks to 21 months that have been killed. Those are very difficult to stop as well for us when you have that age of a child. And we've had fewer domestic violence-related, but the biggest difference that we see is the gang violence. When we started this a year and a half ago, we audited our murders, and the vast majority of our murders, 50%, were GMI group member involved. Mm-hmm. And now we're down to possibly this year of only two or three gang-related killings, and that's where our biggest reduction has come from.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, inkstershow@wrkf.org to talk with Hiller Moore, the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish for the last 5 years. You have, around 60 prosecutors, something like that?
58. Yes, sir.
And when you took office, you were in the low 50s, a few more, but...
Some grant money assisted us with some domestic violence programs that we've had. And we also have some section chiefs that are retiring at November of next year, and we are trying to train others to take their place.
So are there prosecutors, more prosecutors needed, or are you involved in more cases now?
You know, everyone can – we always think that we need more people, and if we had more, we could do probably a better job and take more time because we have a lot of cases, around 25,000 a year. So, you know, it's a big load. But we've seen a reduction in the number of felony cases that have come in. We've seen an increase in the number of misdemeanors that have come in. But, you know, if we receive more prosecutors, then you may need more judges, more police. So every time you add a police class, you're adding a lot more cases for us, and we have to try to keep up, which we really can't.
Now, as far as gang-related crime, is that still an issue that's
prominent? I think that'll always be. Gang or group related. We call them street gangs compared to the gangs that you read about. And we probably have now, Jim, around 32 different groups or street gangs, but they change from time to time. But we do have a pretty good handle on the membership, where they're located, who their associates are, and that's comes from a lot of intelligence on the street, but also our crime mapping through LSU and Dr. Tracy Rizzuto.
Well, you gave me a copy of a Baton Rouge Advocate story from 1986, May 23rd. Baton Rouge Police Chief Wayne Rogelio says the purpose of a roundup was to let street gang members know that law enforcement is targeting those groups, gangs. Yep. This is 1986, the 39th Street Warlords, the Southside Wrecking Crew, the Park yep. Boys, the Lakeside Boys, Fruit Town, Zion City Smurfs, Dixie Boys, yep. the Banks. Gangs were around 27 years ago.
Yeah, I'd probably like to trade mine for those right now. But surely they've been around, and I've noticed the terms that are used in that article, focused. And so what we're doing now is focused deterrence. On any given day in the past, we would take our 700 or so law enforcement officers and go after 3,000 potential bad guys. But under this new strategy, you focus on the group that's causing the most trouble right now, and you identify them, and you have them in a call-in, if you've read the call-in story in the paper. And we have 30 or so people in a meeting, and we said, we're focused mm-hmm. on you. And the risk to them goes up tremendously, and we believe that's why we've been successful.
All right. 297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Aaron asks about an issue that we've discussed on this show before about people being reluctant to come forward yeah. because of their fears of their own safety.
Absolutely.
Is that a big problem?
Sure. It always is. And, you know, the communities that we need our help the most, they're most fearful because they're afraid to be identified. So what the people can really do is they can always call Crime Stoppers, completely anonymous. They could always go to a minister because of the privilege that's there. And that's what I would suggest to them. If you do call the police and the radio dispatcher, you let those people know that I want to remain anonymous, and you can remain anonymous, or I want to give information but have the officer not come to my home. Would you have him meet me somewhere else or just call me on the phone? But again, if you want to remain completely anonymous, Crime Stopper, I think the question may also be safety. Mm-hmm. And we really can't physically protect folks unless they really want protection. We do have means of putting folks up in hotels and homes and rooms that we have. Oftentimes that only lasts a day or two because they eventually want to go back out and go back to their home. They have kids, they have jobs. So we mainly assist people as much as we can. We've done a very good job, in my opinion, this year. We have dedicated staff of victims assistance counselors. That is all that they do.
Paul at LSU, you're on the air with East Baton Rouge Parish District Attorney Hiller Moore. Hi, Paul.
Oh, well, Mr. Angster, good morning.
Hi.
Hey, Paul.
Hiller, I'm sitting in my car about to go to my office, and I heard your voice. I'm calling for this reason. Hiller and I were close friends, and then thank goodness he was elected district attorney, which means that, well, we don't see each other very often. And so I just want to take this opportunity to say, Mr. Angster, I like your pace of delivery. I listen to your show. If I could speak as softly and as coherently as you do, my student evaluations would be higher. And as to Hiller, I love you dearly. I wish you a Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you, Paul. Paul's been around for a little while, I think.
He has. He and I have worked on some cases together. Took a class, probably the lowest grade I've ever made. Still remains friends, but he is an extremely bright fella, is one that I've learned a whole lot from.
Thank you, Professor. Now, speaking of LSU, you've worked very closely with Ed Shahada.
Yes, Dr. Ed Shahada, criminologist, Dr. Cecile Guin, Dr. Tracy Rizzuto, Dr. Juan Bartholomew, and their staff of student research team is unbelievable, whiz kids. And I'll tell you, I'm not sure that we'd be in the position without them. Man, what we're really looking forward to is real exciting stuff, what's called dashboard reports, mm-hmm. where we feed into the LSU supercomputer all of our police reports and all of our data, and then they map it out for us, and we're looking forward to that.
297-5633. We'll talk with Hiller Moore about all kinds of things, including the heroin problems we're having in Baton Rouge, the number of heroin-related deaths in this community for this year. Overwhelming compared to other years. Why is this going on? 877-217-5757, wherever you may be, back in 90 seconds on WRKM. This is Jim Engster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. East Baton Rouge Parish District Attorney Hiller Moore is with us. And 4 days before the close of 2013, there is relatively good news on the crime front, with murder down over 27% thus far this year. Hiller Moore saying shots fired down 50% in this community. Now, when we went to the break, you were talking about dashboard technology. How does this work?
Well, when this program started, we dumped over several hundreds of thousands of police reports in the computers at LSU. And that computer can read these reports like we cannot. And we are on the chessboard itself on the street playing the game. And the folks at LSU are in the big tower above us, and they can see more globally all of the different components, and they can see links between different people that we can't, because we can't read hundreds of thousands of reports. And they can see things, hopefully eventually in real time, as they are occurring. They can send us to a particular street location at a particular time for a particular person, and we can work smarter given the limited resources that we have. It's going to be a real exciting time. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. Some other cities are there. Mm-hmm. We just need that technology, and we're on our way to getting there.
Arthur on Dalrymple. Hi, Arthur. You're on the air with Hiller Moore.
Hello, Hiller. Hey. I had a comment and a question.
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if you could talk about the correlation between law enforcement and criminal activity going up at the same time. And a second question, I'm sorry, would be how much, if everything stayed as it is right now, how much law enforcement do you think would be needed to get the criminal activity taken care of in Baton Rouge? Thank you.
I missed the first part of the question. Can you maybe clarify it a little bit more about the increase in that?
Yes, sir. I was reading a poll the other day that was giving a correlation between law enforcement and increased activity in criminal. I don't remember how they correlated. I believe it was a poll on jails and the size of jails and the correlation between law enforcement and criminal activity. Mainly the second question was what I was going for. Sorry.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure of the poll you're talking about, but I don't know if you mean it. If the more law enforcement we have, the more people that will be arrested and put in jail, which I can maybe understand that is an issue. I'm not sure how that fits in, but we are hoping that we're able to sustain what we have now with the law enforcement resources that we have, particularly if the murder rates continue to drop and the crime continues to drop. I think we're able to handle what we have now. I think what we need to do better is our social network and social research component of social media. That's where everything is done. When we have a murder, Jim, everything is probably captured somewhere on somebody's phone, either in a text or a cell phone, and that technology is out there, and we really need to be able to get that information quickly, and we'll be able to solve more. So I think where we're moving is more technology. And we don't have those people just yet in the different departments. So I think that's where we really need to go in order to sustain what we have.
So social media is something that is helpful for what you do.
It can cause crime and make it difficult for us. And we can also solve crime and prevent crime through social media as well. So it's good and bad.
Well, and people who carry cell phones now, you know, they can report something quickly if they're
they can organize something quickly. So it's good and bad, and you know, text messages, Twitter, all these different things that I really am not sure. Facebook, it's stuff that's out there, and people put. You'd be surprised at what people put on different accounts.
Dr. Landry on Jefferson Highway. Good morning, Dr. Landry.
Good morning, Mr. Jim and Mr. Hiller Moore. How are you all?
Happy holidays.
I'm good, Doc. How you doing?
Hippolyte.
Very good. I have nothing to say, bad or good. All I want to do is congratulate you, Hiller, on the good job you're doing. And Mr. Jim, you the same way, old buddy.
Well,
you add a spark to our city that you don't know, I'll tell you. So, Happy New Year to both of you guys. It's been always a pleasure having both of you, my friend.
Well, th- Thank you, Hippolyte. Look forward to your next party.
Thanks, Doc. Doc's been around. He was the first coroner when I was a young DA investigator going to different crime scenes. And I think he took me to my first scene, of a person who's dead and killed. And it's it was a surely unique, different kind of experience. But I'm glad he was there to surely help me along.
Thank you, Hippolyte. Happy New Year.
Have a nice New Year.
You too.
Bye. Bye.
Now, we had Bo Clark, who's one of the successors to Hippolyte Landry. He was on this show not so long ago, and he was talking about heroin.
Yeah.
And the number of deaths, startling.
It's unbelievable.
How many so far this year?
Right. I mean, to my knowledge, Jim, the last count was 34, and I think, unfortunately, we may be working on 35, where you have to wait for the different results to come back of heroin overdose. And it's shocking compared to just last year. And then the year before that, it's just been a significant increase. I want to say maybe we have a 300% increase this year. It's that significant.
So it was under 10 last year.
I think it was 10 or 12. I'm just guessing right now.
Okay.
We found where we've had two people killed at the same time or die at the same time with shooting up heroin themselves. Oftentimes with these bodies, the needles don't even leave the arm, that it's that quick. It's that instantaneous. We've been working really hard with the Baton Rouge Police, the Sheriff, the FBI, ATF Marshal Service to try to find the source of the heroin. It's just not that simple. It's not just one source as well. And they're working diligently on that. It's a health concern. Dr. Clark has done a good job trying to get the message out. It's young people. And the other is this is a young white male generally problem. I think that if we're at 34, my guess is right now that 33 of the 34 have been a white male, a white female, but generally white males.
It's a lethal drug, but obviously some people take heroin and don't get killed. What's causing these people?
Dr. Clark can surely articulate that, as I'm sure he has. But what we've seen is a lot of these kids have come out of rehab, and they were maybe hooked on heroin or hooked on Roxycontin or some synthetic type of heroin. And when they get out, the rehab didn't take, and they go back to the same dosage of heroin that they used prior to going to rehab, and their body's just not used to it, and it's instantaneous. Apparently the purity is it's pretty high.
297-5633 for Hiller Moore on WRKF. HB in Denham Springs. Hi, HB.
Good morning and Merry Christmas to both of you.
Same to you.
Mr. Hillard, would it take 2 to 5 years for a major case defendant to make it to trial? Would we do a better job in the process and speed up the process by having a night court for both felony and misdemeanor? Thank you, sir.
When we're talking about 2 to 5 years, HB, it's probably not that long unless you're talking about a murder case. And when we talk about death penalty murder cases, then you surely are looking at 5 years go to trial itself with all the different motions. We're averaging around 300 motions per defendant for a death penalty case. Night court probably is not going to assist that. With the volume right now that we're seeing of the crimes that are going down, we probably are able to handle it as we are now with the court staff that we have. If you had night court as well as regular court that we have, that means you'd have to have more staff at night. And I think night court generally works a lot better on the misdemeanor type of cases. We have a city court that handles the vast majority of the misdemeanors. So although I guess the more bodies you threw at, judicial bodies you threw at crime, yes, it would probably cut the load down. It'd make it quicker. You would add an increased amount of money, a lot more money to throw at it. We're going to try to do something a little bit different at the beginning of the year where we're going to have an assistant DA, a public defender, and a judge at jail, and we're going to try to get through some cases quickly, identify cases that should be diverted or not even prosecuted at a really early stage. So we're going to try it out for a couple of weeks to a month. We can see how that works, so hopefully we can cut that delay down, because delay just it's not good for anybody, particularly like people like UHB that follow what's going on. It gets frustrating, and you need to have support in your system and trust. You need to know that's a legitimate system, and that delay really cuts against that.
297-5633 for Hiller Moore, the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish. He's held this position since winning Going Away in 2008. Martin says, or asks, any thoughts about you running for mayor in 2016?
No, sir. I'm really, really like the job that I have. I think it's the best job anyone could want, particularly in my position. It's one that I wanted since I was a young man, probably at 19. And I really have some dedicated employees, talented staff. I appreciate the thoughts. Several people have asked me about it. I just think I'm better situated where I am. And I really don't, I'm not a politician. I really don't like running for office, having to ask people for money, support. And I like where I am.
How closely do you work with the mayor?
Closely. Obviously, the mayor and I are the grantors on the Brave grant. We talk to each other and his staff regularly, work hand-in-hand every day with the chief of police and the sheriff, all the different agencies. We have really good relationships now with the violent crime unit, the targeted violent offender program, repeat offender program. We really have some people that are in some top places that get along very well. No one cares who got the job done. We all work together. It's been phenomenal. I think that's one of the big reasons we have this success.
A couple other questions online if you'd like to join us. By phone, 297-5633. We're live and waiting. J.C. Kane producing. But Kevin asks about the misdemeanor jail.
Yeah.
How would this work?
It'll work. Dr. Ed Shahada, again, is one that did a study of crime and the crime rates when the misdemeanor jail was open. If you recall, Jim, we had a few weeks there where we had the misdemeanor jail available. Right now, for the most part, when someone is issued, someone commits a misdemeanor offense, they do not go to jail. They're issued a summons. And this, my comments are not meant for everybody because it would not be true. Oftentimes, at summons, it's a piece of paper where you say, okay, I'm going to agree. I'm coming to court when I receive notice to come to court. We have right now 160,000 outstanding warrants for people who just don't come to court. Either they get a traffic ticket and it's kind of laughed at, or they get the misdemeanor summons and they said, come find me, I'm not coming. If you have a misdemeanor jail, people know that they're subject to going to jail. The risks get really high. And so instead of giving you a summons, and there's officer discretion for this, maybe an open container, maybe you're not going to jail, but the officer will pick you up, bring you to the misdemeanor jail where you're not going to be held more than one day or 2 days. If you're there that long, you probably have other issues, other warrants pending. A bond is going to be set. It's going to be a very low bond. However, you'll be fingerprinted and booked, and everyone's going to know in law enforcement that that record is there. You can have a bondsman that's going to set your bond. And if you don't come to court, I don't have to get you. The sheriff doesn't have to hire someone to get you. The bondsman brings you in. And when there's 10 people that have not come to court, that bondsman is looking at a lot of money. You're going to come to court because they're going to bring you there. And so we have more accountability. The warrants will go down. And Dr. Shahada's research showed that crime has significantly decreased during those weeks when everyone knew that the risks were greater of you going to jail and people behave better.
So what needs to be done to make this?
It's we're moving in that direction right now with the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, who has sponsored this, and we found some ways that we can do it money-wise. It'll also make some money, and it may be that we only need this misdemeanor jail for at least a few years, where I think that at that point you'll see the warrants have decreased, and we'll see what happens, reassess it then. It's a money issue. It's $1 million a year to run that jail. The jail's already there. Question is, who runs it, the constable or the sheriff? But it's the physical location is there. Just need the people to run it, and it's ready to go.
Where is it?
It's at the city court, the actual jail there now. It's certified by the federal government. It's ready to go. It's not a nice place to be, but you're not going to stay there. You're going to stay there a very short period of time, and that's what our goal is, to get you in and get you out. But you're fingerprinted and you're ID'd. Right now, when you get a summons, and you may have 10 summonses, and if you get arrested for a felony charge with me, I'll never know that you had these misdemeanor summonses, because I'll run your rap sheet and I'll miss all 10 because you're not on there, because you've never been printed or booked. And that's one of the big benefits for us to that jail.
All right, 297-5633. Annie asks how the the St. George community, if it becomes a city, how will that affect your office?
Well, it's still the parish of East Baton Rouge Parish,
right.
So I would still be the DA of the same
of
city
St. George.
Of
Saint,
like I am city of Central Baker, mm-hmm. Central
right.
Zachary. I'm really not sure how the lack of the funding issues. They would still pay all of their taxes like they citizens
right.
do now in the city of Baton Rouge that live in St. George. I'm just not sure overall how that's going to would affect us, because that's a difficult question. It's one that I just really don't know the answers to. I've met Mr. Browning briefly. I'm going to talk, but there's a lot of folks, as you've seen, that indicate that they believe that's going to really hurt the city badly.
Well, that'll be a big issue.
That'll be a big issue
in the coming year. Maybe the biggest issue,
probably
in the early part of the year, if not longer. 297-5633. Veterans and mental health courts.
Yeah.
How would those work?
Well, my opinion, we need them badly. If Jim, if you went through the jail or just sat through booking, you would see that mental health is a huge issue. And you can go to juvenile court and you see that mental health is an issue. And we need to find a way to try to assist these people so that they're not returning to court and that they're getting the help that they need, particularly our veterans who have served the country. We see them oftentimes with drug issues, alcohol issues, domestic violence issues, and they're struggling from their past. And what we need to do is try to identify them early on and to divert them, if we can, depending on the case, and get them some assistance, because we just don't want mm-hmm. them to come back. Oftentimes, veterans are too proud to say, I'm a veteran, and I want some help, and I need some help. And we need to find a way around that. It's been successful in other cities. And I believe that we have judges here that will step up and say, I'll take that chore and I'll take that job on. Same thing with truancy courts. The same type of issue that we have.
297-5633 is your number. Now, I guess it was early part of this year, maybe actually going back to 2012. I think it was 2012, latter part of the year. You focused on the 70805
right
zip code. Is that still?
Yeah, Jim, our initial grant, the Brave Grant, was specifically designed only for 70805 and crime reduction. We weren't sure that we were going to get the grant, and so we were started to proceed without the grant money.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came in, so we're focused in 05. It still remains our hotspot, by far. Hotspot. We've applied for other grants, and we've shown where if crime goes up in 70805, it's down at 02, adjacent, and vice versa. So now we have a new grant for 02, and we're looking forward to starting that grant.
In 70802?
Absolutely.
Which is next door?
Yes.
Okay. So the 64 murders we've had this year.
I can't tell you the numbers, but again, the vast majority, 05, 02.
More than half.
I would guess, but that'd be close.
Back in 90 seconds, 297-5633. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Hiller Moore, the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish, is with us, and we're glad to be with you 2 days after Christmas. And Hiller Moore had some celebrating to do. If you can ever celebrate crime, there's a reduction, a significant one, in this community in 2013. And hopefully this trend will continue in the year to come. 877-217-5757 outside the area, and Inkster Show at WRKF.org if you'd like to pose a question online. Now, truancy, you've accented this. Truancy court. Do we have a real problem in this area, in this community?
Sure. Just like any other big city, we have an issue with truancy we had for some time. We'll continue to have one for some time. We really need to focus our efforts on our kids in school and keeping them in school, not only just through September when maybe it matters for some funding, but throughout the entire year. We also need to focus on why kids are not coming to school. I can guarantee you that when kids are not in school, bad things are occurring, and I eventually have to see them, or judge has to see them. And if we pay more attention and keep these kids in school, we're going to do a better job. We flew a prosecutor down from Alameda County in California, Oakland, and San Francisco areas. And they have she started a truancy court there. And we met with about 60 mm-hmm. of our people here, including some judges, legislators. And they have a really good approach to truancy and how to set up a truancy court. And we hope that we're going to be able to at least try to get that off the ground next year or just get in the process. It works if it can work there, you know, in Oakland, and that area can work in Baton Rouge. And we just need to get committed and have some funding and have a judge to take it, which I'm sure we can find. And it take one day a week, bring these kids and their parents into court before a real judge to let them see mm-hmm. this is we mean business, and let's get to school and find out what's going on.
Question from Mark. He asks if New Orleans has followed the trend of Baton Rouge. Is the murder rate down in New Orleans?
Yes. We visited New Orleans 2 weeks ago for their call-in. They're on their fifth call-in. We're on our second call-in. And they employ the same strategy we have. And I believe that you're going to see that New Orleans will have the lowest murder rate since 1974 because of the strategy that they've employed, which we have. We have the same expert who started the ceasefire, Dr. David Kennedy. He's our advisor. We believe that with 4 days left, you know, we're trying to find some wood to knock on. So we're going to have our lowest murder rate since 2004 in Baton Rouge, which is significant. But, Jim, I think as you indicated earlier, you go back to September. From September to December of last year, there were 25 murders. Year before last. And
25 plus 83.
But September of 12 to end of 12, we only had 13. So that's a significant reduction from 11 to 12.
I
so when we started in September. So we're probably 40 bodies down as a result of beginning this program.
And it's being used in New Orleans as well. That's good news.
And we're also trying to bring it to other cities. We've rolled it out to the District Attorneys Association to let them know what strategy we employed. And the governor's office is interested in that. And maybe we can use our model and mm-hmm. use it across the state for other cities.
877-217-5757 for Hiller Moore, the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish, who grew up in New Orleans and came here as a college student, and you've been here pretty much
about 40 years
ever since. This is home. Chester in Baker. Chester, you're on the air with Hiller Moore. Hi, Chester.
This past year, it seemed like there was a report every other week of kids with guns at school, and I wanted to know what sort of statistics you have on this and other in-school crimes and what efforts are being made to make schools safer.
Chester, that's a very good question. We see those reports when we find that there are kids with guns at school. Oftentimes, sometimes you read them, they're plastic. Sometimes they're guns with not loaded. Still, regardless of loaded, not loaded, you don't want a kid with a gun coming to school. Mm-hmm. Very dangerous, disruptive, scary. I wouldn't want to be the teacher in that school. It's an issue. It's a significant issue. What do you do with that child? You can't send him back to that same school, or do you? Do you send him to another school where other kids in the same situation are? Can you have dogs? Should you have dogs at transfer points sniffing kids' bags for guns? Should you have checked every kid gets off the bus with a dog? It's an issue, and it's one that school board and the sheriff's office, particularly since they have a lot of school security that they're working on now. And we do work daily with the school system and their security on these kids to find out why there's a gun in the kid's backside.
Thank you, Chester. Good to hear from you. It's been a while. 297-5633 as we move along with Hiller Moore, the DA for East Baton Rouge Parish. And he says he's running for reelection, not running for mayor in a couple of years. Now, yeah, it's obvious you love your job, but it's not the easiest position, and you've been personally threatened. It wouldn't be everybody's cup of tea.
I think that comes with the job. I believe it's an easy job, again, because I have a lot of very dedicated employees, and I love doing what I'm doing, and hopefully we're making a difference. The threat part, that I think that comes with the job. It's one of the things that you have to take. Maybe that means that you're doing what you're supposed to do, and the message is maybe getting across. I think a lot of times when these people make threats, they're trying to look bad or be bad when maybe they're really not. They're probably crying out for other things, but surely you have to be careful and be safe, and we try to take every effort we can. I don't like it for my family. I can handle it for myself, but family is actually don't sign on for that job, but they are.
Nope.
So we just have to be mindful and be careful, but it's part of the job.
Ashley in Broadmoor. Hi, Ashley. You're on with Hiller Moore.
Hi. I had a question about how you think the white flight is going to affect Baton Rouge, especially the neighborhood, Broadmoor and Sherwood, Tara, things like that. Thank you.
I think that's every city, big cities, I think that you've seen those effects and, what effect it has on crime. I'm not sure, but right now we're seeing a crime reduction. So hopefully it's going to have no effect, maybe more effect on some taxes and issues. It could be that Baton Rouge becomes, as it appears to be eventually, could be a majority-minority city. So politically it could have effect, tax-wise it could affect. Hopefully crime-wise it's going to remain the same or even with what we're doing now, maybe get better. But I think it's more political and tax-wise than any other way.
Well, you know that sometimes when crimes are committed in certain parts of the city, they get more attention than they do in others. Is that part of the...
Agree or disagree? I've heard that before. I've heard that from people that are...
Maybe not
upset.
More attention from you, but from the community at large.
For sure. From the community, it does get more attention. That's absolutely true. But I know these police officers work hard on any case that they have, and it just doesn't matter where the crime occurs. What we do see is we need more help, Jim, to be honest. When a crime happens in a black community, and if you take that same crime, maybe it happened in a white community, just, if you want to pick black or white or Asian or green, whatever, we do seem to get more calls and more information from witnesses than you do if it's a black on black. And we need to change that. It's a historical issue. It's a lack of trust oftentimes in law enforcement and how the community sees law enforcement and law enforcement sees the community, which is a big part of the BRAVE program of trying to rectify that problem. And so we need all the help that we can get. We need people to cooperate, mm-hmm. but they need to know that the system is legitimate and they can trust the system. Mm-hmm. And I think oftentimes that's why you see, particularly on the black-on-black crime, that there's not quite as much people trying to run to talk to the police.
But in your case, you have a crime rate that nationally was among the very highest in America, something you inherited and something that you've had to deal with. It's improved, but it's still high. And yet the kinds of cases that often generate the most attention are like the Jordan Jefferson case.
Yeah.
Is that a bit frustrating?
Sure it is. We try to give equal attention to all the cases when we can. When you have national media, sports media wants to know, and maybe some Jim Inkster people that want to call and ask you about different things. It gets a little frustrating because you're trying to focus on other things, but then you're kind of in the glass house on that case, and you need to handle it the way you can. Every case is unique and different. And, when we get it from an arrest, that's based on probable cause. When we get it, he immediately jumps to beyond a reasonable doubt. And there's always other kind of gray areas that come into play, and laws and lawyers and judges and appeals. And it's never seems to be the way that it's initially portrayed. It's always, after further review, things maybe are not exactly like it was said. And people change their stories, change statements. It's a fight. Everything we do is a fight.
Oh, yeah. Now, speaking of LSU football, at a game this year, I saw you in the company of Derek Jeter and CeCe Sabathia, two future Hall of Famers, Jeter for sure and Sabathia probably. How did they end up in Tiger Stadium?
It's a long story, but I should have called you. I just completely forgot. They just happened to come to Baton Rouge through a friend that had them, and they needed someone just to escort them in, so I was... being a Yankee fan. I was chosen to escort him in the game, and one was easier to hide than the other because of the size difference and a big hood.
Sabathia is a huge man.
He's very large man. Jeter in particular, whether you're a Yankee fan or not, just a regular person or a baseball fan, this is just a real gentleman. Just one of the best guys that you want to meet and spend time and talk to people. Never said no to a picture or a handshake, and was just a real gentleman.
He wears his success well. And he made his first trip to Tiger Stadium, and I'm sure he was impressed.
I don't think he got to see much of the game.
No.
Because of the folks around him. But
that same game, the Duck Dynasty crowd
was there, and
they were mobbed.
There seemed to people seemed to forget about Derek Jeter when that
Phil
crowd
Robertson
came around.
Was around, right?
I don't think it was Phil. It was Willie, maybe.
Okay. Charles Bush writes, what is Mr. Moore's outlook on legalization of marijuana?
I'm right now, I've recently met with a previous coroner, Dr. Cataldi, who is dead set against the legalization of marijuana. I'm right now in that position. I can see the pros and cons. I've read as much research as I could around the country. My concern mainly is for kids. And I like to study more Colorado and other places that have legalized it and what effect it has had on children. And juveniles, are they more having more access to marijuana? We have it now. I don't like what I read about the effects of marijuana on children and their brains and development. And surely that's my main focus right now. And I think it'll probably come up this legislative year. Probably no action taken, but I think in the years to come, that'll probably be an issue that'll have to be fully debated and looked at, medically. And I've read both sides. It's there's a lot of pros and cons, but my concern is kids.
Okay. You and I lost a good friend this year in Wilbur Jordan.
Yep.
Fine attorney who died suddenly, and you spoke at his funeral.
Yeah, Wilbur was a good fellow, city prosecutor when I was a defense lawyer. You see Wilbur, I can imagine it now. He's smiling somewhere, always smiling.
Yeah.
Always had a good attitude, always had a joke. Was pretty much a pioneer, if you recall, in college basketball, first black at a college in Mississippi. And he was probably the perfect person to be in that position at the time and probably had everybody laughing, telling jokes. And was a good man. His wife's a good lady. She works hard with kids and truant kids. And surely miss him.
Well, yeah, he was a remarkable man and broke the color line at Southern Mississippi, I think, in the first in the Deep South.
It was, and you're right.
USM, and that was before Collis Temple did so here in Baton Rouge at LSU. And Hiller Moore has degrees from LSU and Southern University.
Yes.
He is a proud graduate of the Southern Law Center.
I am, and our daughter is a recent graduate.
Really?
And lawyer, so very fortunate.
And it's amazing how many people in this community and elsewhere graduated from Southern's Law Center.
Really proud of the work that they do, and I have brothers and sisters that have graduated from there, and I wouldn't be here without that school.
So can we get Southern and LSU to play football against each other?
That's way above my pay grade. That's a Skip Bertman.
Well, it was a Skip.
Now, well, but he may be the only one to broker it now. I don't know.
Joe Oliva is a guy who could make it happen. Yeah. But, next year we'll have ULM and Mighty New Mexico State and Sam Houston State invading Tiger Stadium, but no Southern Jaguars. Now, you mentioned briefly about domestic violence. I know that's one of your areas that you really focus upon.
Yeah. Man, I have a real dedicated assistant DA, Melanie Fields, and a staff of investigators and victims assistance coordinators that are really attacking domestic violence. Jim, I believe last year we had 12 to 14 domestic violence deaths. This year we're down significantly from that.
So of the 83 a year ago, 12.
My recollection was 12 at least.
That's
were
certainly significant.
It's a significant number. And so we look at every domestic violence case now and review it, and we take that real seriously. And we've done a really good job with the Domestic Violence Center, IRIS. It's a new name for the center. Mm-hmm. And the police are now attuned more of how to handle these cases. Oftentimes when we get the domestic violence arrest, you can count that that victim, as beaten as badly as she may be beaten, will be in my office within a week or 2 weeks wanting that charge dismissed. And it's a difficult situation.
Well, we commend your work. It's not the easiest job, but here's a man who's embraced it with zeal and has had some success. And congratulations on a good year.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate you having me here.
And we look forward to hearing from you in 2014.
Good
Happy
to see
New
you.
Year, Hiller Moore. And we'll be back Monday. Until then, for J.C. Kane, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.